Blog Talk Radio.
When it comes to laptops, desktops, software, video, or blogging, Terry Brock is one of the best in the business. We're talking technology today, and your questions will help us demystify the ins and outs of knowing what to click, remove, duplicate, or delete. We're talking technology with Terry Brock, and I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, everyone. We're really glad that you're joining us today, and I have a special shout-out to my friends and listeners in Southern California. I got a wonderful email from some of the listeners there, and I'm always excited when I know where my listeners are located and how they are listening to Focus on Empowerment and downloading the show. We encourage you to let your friends know they can certainly join in the fun, either listening online or in our chat room, or they can call in. If you have a question, you can always call in to 646-727-2766. That's 646-727-2766. So welcome aboard, and thank you so much, my friends out in Southern California. We are also excited by the members who joined the Multicultural Symposium Series in the month of June. We have an ongoing campaign going. Every month we want to bring in 50 new members, and I'm excited about those who came in and came on board in the month of June. If you want more information about the Multicultural Symposium Series, go to my website at www.mssconnect.com, and you can find out all about it. You can click through to the members page and join online or download the form. That's www.mssconnect.com. And if you can always send me an email at let me back up from there. Tell Carol, TellCarole at mac.com. Let me know your thoughts. Give me some show ideas. Let me know who we should bring on Focus on Empowerment. So I'm really excited today. We're talking about technology. It's the first day of July. It's nice and balmy and sunny here in Boston. And wherever you happen to be, I hope you're having a great day or evening. I've known this gentleman now for, 15 plus years maybe, as long as I've been a member of the National Speakers Association. He is well known in the speaking circles, and certainly when it comes to technology and getting out there and doing things that are bold and courageous, you can't find a better person than Terry Brock. And I love Terry Brock, not just because of the knowledge that he has, but he is the kind of person where he's going to break things down, put it in lay language, and bring you along so that you get excited about technology, the ways that you can use it to improve your life, improve your productivity on the job, and not be afraid to ask him really important questions. We have some of our listeners who have already sent in questions, and we're going to ask Terry Brock these questions very shortly, but just want to say welcome aboard, Terry Brock. Welcome aboard, Terry Brock. Here we go.
All right. Well, it is great to be with you, Carol.
I am so glad that you're with us today. You know, I've known you for a long time. I'm just amazed at what you do. You're pretty much a solopreneur, but you use resources and technology in a way that makes you not only more efficient, but certainly at the top of your game. How long have you realized and recognized that technology was the wave of your future, Terry Brock?
Oh, gee, I guess from way back in school, in ninth grade, I remember I would bring in the little cassette recorders that we had back then, and I would record the classes and then listen to those over and over so I could understand more what they were talking about in biology there in high school. But I realized that technology really is an empowerment. It's a way for us to extend our brains. Throughout history, it's been that way. And so as we can empower ourselves, I love what you talk about, you know, focus on empowerment and what technology does is it gives us the ability to really get things done that we couldn't do before, and I think it's just wonderful.
Well, what I think is amazing with you is that, I mean, you didn't graduate with a degree in electrical engineering or mechanical engineering or technology. You sort of adapted, and you certainly have the know-how. You have an MBA degree, but you have the know-how to embrace technology. I know just a couple of other people who are excited about the use of technology. It's like you're not afraid to venture out there, give it a shot, and then share what you know.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head there. That's the key for everyone, all of our listeners. If someone is saying, well, gee, I'm not a technology person, I would say, well, wait a minute. You're a person that wants to excel. You want to succeed. You want to have empowerment, focusing on that empowerment. And technology is one way to do it. It has worked very well through the centuries. And so we've got to have the right mindset, a mindset that says, hey, let's have some fun with this thing. You know, let's get out there and do it. Just don't tell any of the grown-ups, okay? Here we go. And you could have a lot of fun and do a lot with serious business applications.
Well, certainly your personality lends itself very well to just embracing something that's new and different. So hats off to what you've done and the courage that you have and the excitement that you have for technology. You know, we were chatting just a few minutes ago, and I mentioned earlier before we went live on our program that last year I was so excited because you called me on my birthday. I got lots of birthday wishes from my Facebook friends and from my personal friends and family, and certainly my daughters serenaded me, so that was a real exciting time. But it was really nifty to have a phone call from Panama from Terry Brock just saying, hey, just want to check in with you. I'm in Panama chilling down here, but just wanted to say happy birthday to you. Now, you were also doing some other things down there, and we have lots of conversations in this country about doing things offshore. But you actually do some of your medical work offshore. So tell us what you do in Panama.
Well, I read a lot of the magazines, I'm sure many of our listeners have as well, about the growing trend and the massive numbers of people that are going for medical tourism. And they're going overseas, outside of their country of origin, wherever that country is, and they're finding the best medical care wherever it happens to be in the world. And oftentimes, it's much cheaper over there. And I found the same thing with dental care. What was going to cost me a whole lot here in the States, I got done down in Panama for literally one-tenth of the cost. And
wow,
the quality of care was far superior to what I had experienced here in the States. And after going back even a year later, after I had the work done, then went back another year later, having it tested and everything, the results came back that it was better than ever. The numbers, objective numbers, were coming back better than ever from qualified professionals that I'm working with who have graduated from people that I'm working with from New York University, a member of the American Medical Association, had a practice in San Antonio for 8 years, then went down to Panama because got tired of all the malpractice and the lawsuits and the lawyers all involved in everything here, and now offers quality care and doing things down there with medicine that we're not allowed to do under the AMA here in the United States.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm intrigued by that. How does that work with insurance for the average person that would have insurance coverage here in this country? Are you pretty much paying out of pocket when you're in Panama or in India? Because I know that people have surgical procedures in India.
Yes, and many other places. You know, the Thailand is well known for that, also in Eastern Europe. But yes, a lot of insurance policies do not cover that. You'd have to check with your own coverage and see what they do cover. Mine does not. However, I found I would pay a whole lot less doing it on my own, paying one-tenth, than I would total with all the insurance premiums extra and the extra deductibles and everything that I would pay. And besides, I've realized, you know, it's like anything. If I want to buy a car, I need to pay for it myself. If I want to go out and buy some extra fancy bread instead of a lower price bread, I pay for that myself. Same thing with healthcare. We have to have a mental shift that says, oh, you mean we're supposed to really pay for our healthcare anyway on our own? Well, yeah. It's like anything else that's there. And then we provide insurance to supplement and help in those areas where obviously we can't do it in every area.
Very interesting. I'll bring you back for another show for that one, because that goes into the area of national health care, which we are getting ready to embark upon here in this country. But it's fascinating.
Yes.
I've read some of the articles about people who are going to different countries and having procedures and the facilities check out very well, and here you are certainly validating that point. Well,
yeah,
let's
it's kind of like actually what it does, if I can extend on that, what that is, it's really part of the lifestyle of using technology, and that we can think we can be anywhere. We can do the kind of work we want. We can get the medical treatment anywhere we want to be on the planet. As you know, I bounced around the world and did a couple of round-the-world trips, literally around the world, operating from many different countries because we can use this technology, and medicine and dental care are just a part of it. Any government that says we are going to control our people and they must do this, etc., is living back in a Soviet-era mentality of the 1930s, saying we will control you, and free people will say, no, we're going to do what we want wherever we want to do it.
Well, it's interesting that you would talk about your round-the-world trips, and I want to sort of focus on that now as we sort of move away from a government conversation, which we'll certainly have later, because, you know, you and I go toe-to-toe on this.
Oh, and I love always talking with you about it.
I tell you. But we want to talk about your round-the-world trips. I was fascinated. I know you turned 50 at some point and then just started bouncing all over the planet, and there are ways, and I'm particularly interested in this and sharing this with our listeners, and this deals with technology, particularly for those who are working 9-to-5 jobs and they want a vacation, they want to travel, but there are ways now where you can start at one point on the planet and go in a particular direction, and as long as you continue going in that direction, then you can see sights beyond your wildest imagination. How does that work, Terry Brock?
You do that with different airlines. There, most of the major airline alliances, like Star Alliance or One World Alliance, SkyTeam, they give the ability to work with their partners so that you start going, let's say, I would recommend going west if you're going around the world. It's just easier with that jet lag thing. And start going west, but keep heading west always, and you can stop at a given number of cities. It depends on the program. And you have usually up to a year that you can use that. So you can say, I want to stay here for a week, or I want to stay here for 3 months and then stay over here for however long it is. For someone who's working that 9-to-5 job and they've got 2 weeks or vacation, then what they could do is to say, you know, there's a couple of places we've really, really wanted to see. And they could line it up to say, we want to hit this place and then this one and maybe a couple of stops along the way over here. So that within 2 weeks, it would be a busy trip, but you've got to look at what you would gain from that. Then education, going to what you talk about and that you and I are just so in agreement on, multicultural learning and expanding our horizons with many different areas around the world, as you're doing so well, Carol. And this way we get a chance to learn, and I find it just incredible. Checking with the airlines is a good place to start on that, and most of them have a desk where they can explain the program, or they can direct you to a website and explain that. But I recommend everyone do that at some point in their life. Put that on your bucket list, the things you want to do before you kick the bucket, the things that you want to get out there and go to that exotic city, make it happen, figure out ways, what's it going to cost, what's it going to cost in time, money, and effort, and do it. And then while you're doing it, take lots of pictures and get lots of video while you're doing it. It's really what life is about.
Well, you can also go to a couple of there's some websites now. You can Google round the world tour or round the world trip and go to these various websites and see how other people have done it. But most importantly, go to Terry Brock's website and you can learn from Terry Brock about how he's done it. And that's terrybrock.com. That's his website, terrybrock.com. Very quickly, tell us about, let's say, one of your most recent round the world trips, and what did you do to share information back home with your clients and customers and friends?
Well, I did it a couple of ways. One way was talking to the general world and population, being able to produce my videos. I would produce a video, shoot it right there on the spot, wherever I happen to be, and then I would put that out on YouTube, take the code and put that code from YouTube, it's called the HTML code, and that would go into my blog, which is my website. And that way people can see, hey, this is where we are, and try to point out certain things that we normally wouldn't see, say, if we're from the United States. So if we have a North American, United States point of view, we get a chance to expand that a little bit and understand other ways that people are doing things, how they're doing life. And one of the things I enjoy most, Carol, is I love going to a place where I'm in the minority where I don't speak their language, and I have to understand it from their point of view. And I'm the one that they look at as, well, you don't speak the language, and maybe he's not as smart. And they're looking at me that way, and I think this is good, because I get a chance to learn and grow from it. And I find it really does expand our knowledge base and helps us to become better human beings by experiencing other people in their culture and trying to communicate with them the best we can.
That's Global Diversity Real Time, as told by Terry Brock. Love it, love it, love it. We have several questions that have been asked, and I want to start off with the first question. And the question is, can you discuss safety issues related to cell phones and brain damage? There have been several studies with quantifiable results of brain damage if phones are directly placed against the skin, sometimes even in pant pockets, or produced and have produced reproductive damage. So what's the latest finding on that, Terry?
Well, it is something that we're very concerned about. All of us are concerned with health, and there are lots of studies that have come out, and it seems like they come out with one study that says, yes, it is a problem. There seems to be an indication that it does contribute toward cancer, and another study will come out and say, no, it doesn't. And I think you've got interests on both sides that are wanting to push a particular point of view. I think that when it comes to health, that's most important. If we err on the side of caution and safety with health, then I think that's a good thing. What I would recommend is, it doesn't matter. If they come out with a study tomorrow and they say, hey, we've decided, we've found out, we supported with double-blind testing, with peer review, that it does not cause a problem, even if they come out with that, it would still be a good idea to use a little earbuds and use that so the phone is away from you. And, of course, you'll be on the safe side. It makes it easier for you to move around, makes it more possible for you to get a lot of things done, or use one of the headsets that use Bluetooth, for instance. Some of those can be very helpful for shielding a lot of the noise. I know I've used the Cobra headset, C-O-B-R-A, and it's been very good for canceling noise, even in extremely noisy environments, and has worked well, and it makes it easier. So I would say err on the side of using the earbud. I know in many states that is required if you're going to use a cell phone in the car. So why not just err on the side of safety and convenience?
Good advice. So just sort of err on that safe side as the experts try to figure out which study makes more sense. And again, I remember I've watched a couple of these programs where there's heated discussions on both sides. You've got people in the telecommunications industry, the lobbyists who come on and they say, no, things are safe. And then you have scientists who are saying, wait a minute, we still need to just test things out. So
yeah,
good advice. Another question is, this person has traumatic brain injury. What is the best computer and adaptive technology to avoid seizures caused by the pixelation on the screen of the computer? Interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, my feelings go out to the person that's experiencing that because I don't have it to that extent, but there have been times when, you know, after a long day, looking at the screen going, oh, man, this is hard to look at. So I can empathize. But I would suggest it's going to be up to you individually and check with your medical professionals. Medical professionals know about these things. One of the things that you could look into is the new iPad, which is available from Apple. It uses a different type of screen. I'm using that now in addition to my other computers, and some of the smaller computers are different. I do not know which one would be which, and they have some tools that are available that can measure the amount of emission from there. Have professionals measure that and look at it and find out what will work best for you. What would work for me in my situation could be different and might be medically better for you to do something different in your situation. So first of all, get the professional help from the medical people, from those that are experts in this. But look into something. Ask your medical professional about the iPad. A lot of times what people need to do, like just checking email, doing some basic word processing, keeping track of clients and contact information, listening to music, watching good videos, you know, essential stuff like that, you can do all of that on the iPad for a whole lot less than you can with some of the full-blown computers, and it's a lot more lightweight and would be better. So I would say to the person that asked that question, be sure and check with your medical professional, find out what they think of the iPad and how it would work.
Now, with the iPad, I know it's just come out and it's very hot. People are excited about it. Your keyboarding would all be done on the same screen, correct? Or how does that work if you're talking about the processing?
Yeah, the keyboard on the screen is one option. You can do it that way, but I also have an external keyboard that you just slide the iPad into, and I got to tell you, Carol, it is comfortable. That little keyboard is smooth. I've used it on airplane, you know, battle-tested on the middle seat of the airline. Being able to use it that way, it works beautifully. And another really nice feature of this keyboard that I've got here, and in fact, I'm looking at it right now, this keyboard is so quiet that when I go to a seminar like you and I do often, and we're taking notes, the person next to me will barely, if at all, hear me typing away on it. It's that quiet.
Ah, and because the technology is different than the other iProducts or Mac products, is that so, Terry?
Yes, I think that it is. I do not know. I'm looking at the screen, and it seems like it's a little bit different to my non-educated eyes. So, again, that's where I would say, see if you can check with your medical professional. Go in and say, hey, what do you think of the iPad? If you have one and you're using it already, we'll bring it in. Or if you've got a buddy that has one, see if you can borrow it. Take it into the doctor's office and, medical doctors, eye doctors, optometrists, and ophthalmologists would be good people to talk to say, hey, what do you think of this in your professional opinion, and what's available in the literature on that? What kind of information are we seeing on the literature regarding specifically the iPad screen?
Good advice. How different is the new iPhone that just was released and you had lots of people in line trying to purchase it? How is it different than, let's say, the one that I have or some of the earlier versions?
Yeah, and the early version, like I have the original iPhone still, and it still works for me and working well, making calls and doing wonderful things. I will probably upgrade to the iPhone with OS 4 very soon, but the new one has much better screen display. You're able to get a lot more pixels on it, which means they can make the pictures much more clear, and that'll be less of the frustration on the eyes that are trying to read those little dots that are on the screen. They're able to put more dots on the screen, which makes it ultimately clearer and easier to read for you and me.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I'm sorry, Terry.
Oh, and I just say, but probably if you can lean toward using the iPad, it'll be an easier screen to read versus the smaller one that's on the iPhone. Now, of course, the iPad is not a phone, but you can make calls with it through Skype.
Okay.
Which will be cheaper, and if you're in a Wi-Fi area, you can use it that way. They will have a charge for using it on 3G with Skype in beginning in August, but but you can still do it, and it will be cheaper than many other situations.
So again, we're talking about more technology that will help you become more efficient. That's interesting. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about computers and aging computers. I'm a Mac user, have been a Mac user for a while, have upgraded to an extent, but now realize that my machines are nearing 4 years old, and they're not really functioning the way they used to. I had a running battle this morning trying to get a report out, and I'll have to work with that a little bit later on. Should we, as business people, as professionals, as people who are on to technology, really sort of factor in a replacement cost every 24 months or so with equipment? Technology is great. We're talking about various equipment and computers, that are new and wonderful. But after about 18 months or so, then the wear and tear starts working on it. And, what are your thoughts about replacement and with technology?
Yeah, you raise a very good point there, because we see that technology changes rapidly. And when we look at something as 4 years old, when you and I grew up there in the Midwest, we would think, okay, we'll just repair it and keep it going.
Right.
Today,
right.
That mentality actually serves and works against us. Whereas if you can get something that's updated and new, we can do a lot more. I can get a computer that I've got. Matter of fact, I've got a Windows machine that is about 5 years old now, and it's been great. It's worked very well, but I had a problem with it. It just wasn't booting quite right, and it would just keep dying and stuff. So I'm looking at, I could complain about that. I think that machine cost me about $3,500 when I got it, or I can go buy one that does much more, is much faster, much better computer for less than $1,000 today. And so one of the things we can do is realize, okay, technology changes, but there's been a significant shift. It's not a matter of just saying, go buy a new computer. We need to do computing in a different way today, and this relates to traveling, being very mobile and moving around, and that is what's called cloud computing. Think in terms of access. Yeah, you access your data from a computer that might be, for instance, say, Google Docs. Google Docs gives you word processing. They give you a spreadsheet. They give you contact management, a calendar, and a host of other services that are wonderful. You can access those from a Macintosh computer, from a Windows computer, from a Linux computer, from almost any net-accessible device that's out there. And so you can start putting your efforts into pouring your data into be on the cloud. So that way you're able to access the kind of information you need from wherever you happen to be. It could be an internet cafe, or it could be a friend's cell phone. But you get what you need when you need it. I can take my iPad or my Windows machine or my MacBook Pro, and I can access my database so that when I know I'm going to put Carol Copeland Thomas's phone number into a particular place, I can get it from wherever. I don't have to worry about a computer crashing, losing my hard disk, and all the data is gone.
Right. I mean, that's such an important point, and increasingly I'm using Google Docs for that same reason. You don't have to worry about what machine you're using. You can go and pull down the information wherever you happen to be. How does that relate to security and backup in terms of your data that you are creating on these websites, these virtual sites, should I say?
Yeah, those are two very important issues, like security and backup. First of all, in security, with Google Docs, you can put a password in there, and that's okay. I wish they gave us the ability to take that further and put an additional password on particular documents.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could say, you know, here it is, but just in case the bad guys got hold of my password, I don't want them getting access to every document that I've created.
Right.
I would rather have something so there's maybe two or three levels. You know, you might be able to get a level with this password up to here, but then for the really, really super double secret probation kind of things, we don't want anybody to know at all, you know, I could have yet another password level on that. They're not there yet with Google, but we're hoping they get there very soon.
Now, I'm sure they will. It's amazing. I know now you can actually take all of your pictures and put them on a website and not have them lost. And in fact, in case your computer crashes or whatever, that's something I'm getting ready to do because I have a Mac account and I want to upload all these 26,000 pictures I have so that they will not get lost at all. So it's just, again, it's
absolutely
amazing. It's a different way of thinking nowadays in terms of how we compute and how we store our information. I want to go back to one of the questions that our listeners ask, and this is what I want to know about too. Do you have a thought in terms of, and the question is, If your computer or your email address is plagued with spam and unsolicited pornographic sites, especially when you have young people in the house, the question is, are there any legal alternatives to this form of abusive harassment?
There are some laws in the United States that you can use, but the challenge is the Internet is international. And so what legal means would you have to prosecute someone who's coming from Costa Rica today, then Romania tomorrow, then Russia the next day, then Cambodia the next day, et cetera, et cetera? Those laws that operate over in their countries obviously are different than what we have here. The very best way to do it would be to say, look, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And you find spam software. You find certain kinds of software that is available to say, no, this computer is not allowed to go to these specific sites. And they have identified certain key sites that would have material that they don't want their children to see. And so those would be listed, and the parents would also be able to add additional material there. And so you could say, no, you're not allowed to go to this computer, is not allowed to go there without a password or without this specific password. So I would say in that case, take matters into your own hands. That's really the best way to do it, because if you say, well, we should have a law that said this, and then maybe they passed a law, it could have some negative, unforeseen consequences of holding out other material that would be very good that others would want to see. But then someone would just say, okay, we're going to stop operating here, and we'll go over to this country, and now we've got it available there.
Well, I think the point that you're making is well taken, the fact that, you know, we're talking about a global internet platform, so that the virtualness or the versatility of someone or someone operating from country to country can change, and the laws obviously are different from one place to the other. So.
Yeah, and we've got to be careful on that, too, because in trying to put things off and say we're going to hold off and not have negative information, then it could be curtailing free speech in other areas. One thing, for instance, comes to my mind, a classic story, years ago on the Internet, when medical doctors would exchange information on health concerns in a women's forum on AOL, they were often banned because they dealt with, because they used the words and typed in breast cancer, and the word breast had been banned. And so medical doctors using these terms were banned from it and treated as, oh, this is spam, this is pornography. And I think too often we can jump in a puritanical way over to say, no, we don't want this. I think what we've got to do is use our judgment, use our heads, and I think about what you would want your children to see and to not see, and then find the software that's out there that says, okay, we've banned these particular sites, and most of the software is very good. You can add additional sites that you might not want them to see, or you could go in and go, no, that site that you said is bad, I deem that it's appropriate for my children, and you can allow that particular site in for your computer.
I hope you're enjoying the show. I'm just learning so much. We're talking to Terry Brock, and he is a well-known expert on technology. He is a speaker, an executive coach, travels literally around the world, talks about, we're going to have you talk about your services in just a few minutes, Terry, but again, the learning process that you can take advantage of by being in his midst is just wonderful. I notice that with your email address, when your email pops up, I not only see your name, but first of all, I see your telephone number. Now, there has to be some strategy behind that. Why is your number replacing the Terry at terrybrock.com when you're sending emails out? And how do you do that?
Oh, I'm glad you noticed that. Yeah, well, that's something that I find different people want to reach you different ways. And so actually what I do on mine, it says Terry at terrybrock.com, Terry Brock, and then you've got my phone number in there so that sometimes people say, you know, I just want to talk to him. I want to talk to a real human being. So they've got it there. And they can pick up the phone, and they can call, and obviously if I'm not there, which happens often, it goes to voicemail. But I get that voicemail then as transcribed on email, and I can read it that way. It comes through very well many times. I've got another system now where it goes to a voice, traditional voicemail box through the cable modem that I have. But I find the whole point of it is be able to let people reach you and contact you in business whatever way is most convenient for them.
How did you set it up? And is this part of your software system where your phone number comes up, or at least you know your telephone number is showing in that email box? How does that work?
Yeah, I set that up through the internet service provider that is taking care of my email, and they want to know what name do you want in there. I could have easily put just Terry, which, by the way, I would not recommend, because people get that and they think, Terry? Which Terry is this? There's more than one out there.
Yeah,
but by putting me, Terry Brock, I'll put Orlando, Florida, and then the phone number, somebody sees that, they know who I am. Plus, also, spammers don't do those things. If somebody wants to send spam, they hide behind a different name, and they certainly don't want to put their phone number or a real email address or a phone number where a live human being will answer that. So it helps people that are the honest ones to see, oh, this really is Terry. Okay, I could get in touch with him about doing some business and hiring him to work for us.
That's a great tip, but particularly for, again, business people and people like me and you who send out a lot of email. And what I typically do is I will put a very long explanation in the subject line so that for my name, my full name is there. They see exactly what the email is all about, and it certainly encourages people to open it up. But I love the idea about putting the phone number in your actual email address. That's really nifty. Very nifty.
Thank you. It's just, again, making things as easy as possible for people to do business with you.
And one more question that came in, and the question is, what is your view on Google's new technology? And Wave is at the very end.
Yeah, Google Wave is the new technology that it really goes beyond just email messages. It's an ability for people to share information, collaborate together. So let's suppose you and I, Carol, were working on a project, and maybe we had people from four or five different countries around the world. We could all use this same address, and it would be a place where we can leave comments. And that way, you and I could leave comments. We're in the same time zone here in the United States, but someone else might be in another time zone or in the other side of the world, and while we're sleeping, they're awake, they would be able to stay in touch with all the email, all the video, all the audio, and the documents that we're putting together. WAVE, I think, is the way that things are going to be moving, the wave of the future, if you will. And it is the way that things are being done in many different collaborative ideas and efforts where people share information and work together as teams. It's a very good way for teams to be more productive and to share information.
Stay tuned. Google will come up with something else tomorrow. I tell you, Google is just dominating a lot in technology. It's just amazing what they're doing.
It really is. I look at it and just go, wow, this is great. And they're doing the right thing, too, Carol. You notice, how much does it cost to have Gmail? Zero, you know, to get the initial account, to have Google Docs, zero. Yet if you like it, and the way they monetize it is they have advertising, and then they also have a premium service. So they will hold X number, whatever the number is right now, of gigabytes of information for you. And if you think, gee, I need a little bit more, no problem. They offer it at a very reasonable cost, and you can gradually extend that. I think that's a good model for many of us in business. Start by offering a lot of value for free, and then have premium services that people can get into because they say, hey, I like this. I know Carol. I like her. I trust her. Therefore, I want to engage with her in business and start doing things. Build that ladder for them so that it's easy for people to know you, like you, trust you, and then engage with you.
And that's why we have this radio program, lots of value, and we bring great people on like you so that people can really taste before they actually try it out from a monetary perspective. That's a great way to look at it. Now, I know we have some listeners who just figured out how to download this radio program. There are some who are listening online, and they have lots more questions. How can people get in touch with Terry Brock if they want to secure your services, use you for coaching purposes, bring you in as a speaker? Tell us how people can get in touch with you, Terry.
Well, the best way to do that is, like you mentioned before, going to terrybrock.com. And, of course, that's spelled T-E-R-R-Y, and Brock is spelled the right way, B-R-O-C-K. And so they can go there and they can get a lot of free information on the web development that I put there, the articles. I just did an article and a podcast just today talking about today being July the 1st. This is the first day of the second half of the year. And now is a great time for doing a mid-year review. We talk about New Year's resolutions, which are real important. Well, how you doing on that? How's that 2010 thingy working out for you, huh? Well, now's a good time, and I recommend people around the world, whether in the United States celebrating 4th of July or celebrating just a regular weekend, to take some time and pause over this coming weekend to say, okay, year is halfway over. How we doing? What's been going well? And what do we need to tweak and improve a little bit as we lean toward, okay, we got another 6 months ahead where we're going to refresh ourselves, take a deep breath, and go for it. But they can come over to my website and read about that, watch the videos that I do. And then I also offer coaching programs for businesses that want to take what they're doing and move it to the next level at a couple of different levels, very reasonably priced so people can get involved and get a wealth of information, learning what to do, which I wish I would have had when I got started. But now I've put it together in a lot of step-by-step. Here's how you get involved with marketing. Here's some specific things you can do on new technologies. And it's available for them right there.
That's great. You also talk about relationships and the importance in relationships. You sort of built that into your services. Now, tell us just a little bit about that.
The way I like to put it, Carol, is I say it's not – relationship marketing is not about the e-commerce, all the electronics, as nice as they are. It's really about the R-commerce, relationship commerce, because the technology we're using today, you and I both know, Carol, it'll be laughable in a few years.
So true.
But what matters most is the relationships, the people that we know. You and I, as an example, have known each other for a long time, many years, and we've been able to see technology change and all that, but we've been able to create some wonderful memories through the years. We've been able to see other people that have come and gone throughout our lives, and I believe that it's the relationships that matter most, and we take the technology and leverage that so we can help people and build stronger relationships.
I love it. I love it. And then I want to go back and talk about my favorite group, the group that I'm a part of, baby boomers. People in their 50s or 60s, I know there are lots of people who are currently in transition, job transition, or they're retiring either early. Tell us what you see on the horizon for baby boomers, particularly people who are not really tech savvy, but want to somehow integrate and use technology in the next chapter of their lives? Because even if you're in your mid-50s or 60s, you still have a lot of living to do, and maybe you're going to start off in another career. So give us some points to ponder with that, Terry Brock.
Well, I think it's better to be a baby boomer and be in the age we are now than at any other time in history. First of all, there weren't that many of them a few years ago. Medical science, say 200 years ago, said, gee, if you reach the ripe old age of 30, that was amazing. And, of course, you'd get married at age 13 and have as many babies, hoping that at least two of the 20 might live. You know, well, today, our medical technology has just progressed to just a jaw-dropping, awesome level, and it's getting better and better all the time. And I think that right now it gives us a lot of opportunity. So what we have to do is adapt a different mindset as baby boomers that we are, that you and I are, and many others, of course, that what we want to do is continually learn. Don't think that, hey, I have arrived because I got a degree, like you've got your MBA from the University of Michigan and be able to go there to sit back and go, okay, I can sit back and not have to do anymore. I know you, Carol, are constantly learning, going to seminars, reading, listening to audio, and that's the thing that we all have to do. Keep learning. And by the way, the benefit of that, the side benefit is, as you stretch your brain, you force it to learn something new and different. Your brain keeps renewing itself and keeps getting better all the time. That is some of the cutting-edge research that we're finding out now in neuroscience, that our brains can change themselves. Norman Deutsch talks about this in his book, The Brain That Changes Itself. And we've seen now that as baby boomers, we can do better if we take an attitude of, I haven't figured that one out yet, but I'm going to do it, and I will read the books, I'll get the coaches, I'll take the sessions, I'll go back and take the classes, and I will figure out how to do this, because now we're shattering those old beliefs that said, when you get to this age, you must do this and this. Now we're saying, forget that. You know, retirement, can't even spell it. We're going to get back and re-engage and go for new things and just stretch it, and let's just see how much fun we could have.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you're such an enthusiastic person. What I also want to recommend to our listeners, too, is that now, because so many universities have open courses where you can go and literally audit a course. You can do that with MIT. You can audit a course, take all the notes, get all the information for absolutely free. So you can actually learn on
yes.
your computer, learn on the internet, and it won't cost you anything. I just think that's amazing.
Isn't that wonderful? I just love it. I mean, I just love going in there, like on my little iPad. I am downloading bunches of stuff from iTunes University, where wonderful learning institutions, universities from around the world can give me a diverse view of opinion. I can hear this side, and I can hear that side, and I can hear all the different complexities on a particular issue from really, really smart people. And I think there's no excuse for not being educated and getting ahead in today's world. We've got the facilities for it, and most of it, a huge chunk of it, is free. It's just that it does take time, and it means you're going to have to probably turn off the TV. Probably going to have to stop all the texting and things that are frivolous and don't matter, and spend some time to really learn that new language or take that course on something. And by doing that, we'll live longer, we'll be healthier, a lot happier, and make a lot more money in business, too.
And I think what you're saying is that you have to have a mindset of learning. You've got to strategically say, okay, every day I've got to maybe plug away for a half an hour, 45 minutes or whatever, learning
yes.
a new technique or going to a particular website or downloading some information. So there's an investment of time. And many times we're talking about baby boomers who are taking these early packages. So they have the time. But it's I would encourage people to go to Terry Brock, because he will help you get the enthusiasm that you need and the courage that you need to really step out there and either start a new business or to become a coach or an advisor, or take some of the information that you've learned through the years. If you've worked in the government or worked as a teacher for many years, there's a way for you to package together your information where it can be of really great service to someone else who's coming up the ranks.
Yes. Absolutely. You think about someone who is a teacher, and you and I both share the same fervor and passion for teaching and the wonderful job that teachers are doing, and some of them getting laid off or they don't have enough money. Well, they can be great tutors. They can teach, and they can offer this on the Internet. Think of something like Skype, a little tool like that, and they can do tutoring for someone anywhere in the world for free, and they set up a PayPal account and can start taking credit cards and be able to make money as a teacher doing that, helping people and helping themselves in a financial way. Again, it's more exciting to be alive today than ever before.
Boy, we could go on and on. I'm excited just talking to Terry Brock and thinking of some new ideas on my own in terms of how you can begin building relationships and using it for the good, not only for yourself, but certainly for people around the globe. This has been an exciting interview, and I just thank you because I know you are a busy man, and we set this up some time ago. But again, tell everyone, Terry, how they can get in touch with you.
The best way will be to go over to the website, go to www.terrybrock.com, and just kind of bounce around, watch the videos that are there, listen to the podcasts, read the articles. You'll get an idea of what I do, and if you're in business, take a look at my High Achievers Coaching System. It gives a program for you to learn specifics on how to blend technology and relationships into your business and be able to help others, and then by doing that, helping others, inevitably it comes back and you help yourself.
I love it. Terry Brock, thank you so much for being a great guest on my show, and I wish you the very best, and I can't wait to see where you're going next so that we can go to your website and find out from your video clips where you are next. It's just really exciting. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you, Carol. You are just a wonderful lady. And for listeners, you got to know this lady is wonderful. I've known her for many years, and she really walks her talk. She is gracious, she's kind, and she's also brilliant. So get to know Carol Copeland Thomas, one of my favorite people on the planet. Thank you, Carol. It's great to be with you.
Thank you, Terry. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was an exciting interview, and I love to bring someone like that on my show periodically because he just has lots of answers, but most importantly, will get you enthusiastic about technology and the things that you can do. So that's what I really love about Terry Brock. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Well, we are going to shift gears a bit, and I wish you could see the way I'm dressed right now because I had a flashback and decided to go into my closet and pull out my T-shirt. And this is the T-shirt that I got around the same time of year back in 1994. And that was the time when I had the opportunity of going to a World Cup game, a match that was held here in the Boston area, actually in Foxborough Stadium. I think it was the game Greece versus Nigeria. I think that was the game. I think it was one of the first round of 32 matches that was played at that time. I have to go back and figure that out. But anyway, I still have this wonderful shirt, and I put it on today just to celebrate what I've learned. I've learned a whole lot in the last 2 weeks, and we still have a little less than 2 weeks to go, about 2.5 weeks. I've learned an awful lot. A game that obviously lots of moms drove our kids to and from these soccer games here in the United States for time and time and time. I did it an awful lot in the 1980s. Didn't think anything about it. Had the opportunity once my kids were growing and almost gone to go to this particular game back in 1994. But for some reason, I am now into football. This is world football. We call it soccer here in the United States. It's really called football in other parts of the world. And I think it's because I truly see the relationship between multicultural issues, cultural values, national pride, and how it just plays itself out with this game of football or soccer. I am just enjoying these games. The first thing I really enjoy about these World Cup games is that, first of all, we're just talking about one game, not five or six or seven, as we see with the Olympics, which is fine. But we're seeing one game where you bring the best of the best in respective countries to the field, and they are systematically being eliminated because of points that are scored, or I call it like sudden death that we saw the other day with Paraguay and the game that they played against Japan, where it was a 0-0 score in the round of 16. but there had to be a winner. So they went to 2 15-minute overtimes, and there weren't any scores, any goals by either side. And then they just went into like a shooting match, and the team that scored the most goals then won. Unfortunately, Japan missed one, and that automatically gave the advantage to Paraguay, and they actually won. It was just exciting to watch not just the players and how well they play on both sides. Certainly Japan did an outstanding job, but just to see the excitement of the fans in the stands. Also to see the despair in the minds and the hearts and the faces of the fans. We have certainly seen lots of face painting. I bet to the face painting companies are making a fortune because of all the faces that are painted in the various stadiums in South Africa, the wigs and the funny hats and the vuvuzelas. Oh, boy, the vuvuzelas that just continue to blow on and on during the game. So we know that these peripheral businesses are doing quite well, but it's just to see the excitement, the anxiety, the adoration, the celebration on the faces of the Patriots, the nationals who have come, who have gone to South Africa, that really is quite exciting. Now, of course, I'm an American, so I was rooting or cheering for the U.S. team this past week, hoping that they would get out of the round of 16 and then move ahead. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen. They played Ghana, and it was really a tight squeeze for me because I have Ghanaian friends, and my dad lived in Ghana for 10 years. So, you know, a little bit of me said, oh, I really want them to move on, and certainly they were the last African country standing. Well, as luck would have it, they scored more points than the United States. The United States, I think, played a brilliant game. It was a well-executed game. They were a little tired at the beginning, but then they rallied to the cause toward the end. But again, what I've also learned about soccer or football is that the fatigue factor then leads to mistakes, and the other side will take advantage of your mistakes, and that's what scores goals. And so it becomes a head game. So you move away from, I've heard some of the American commentators, which I don't necessarily agree with. Some of them have made fun of the fact, oh, it's a very low-scoring game, it's a boring game. It's not a boring game. It's a very interesting game. And it's a head game if you really get into it. So I'm really a new convert, and I just say hats off to all 32 teams that made it into the World Cup. We have now completed the round of 16 and seen teams sort of win and not win. The teams, I think, that you want to really watch certainly are those South American teams. They are absolutely on fire. Knew about Brazil because Brazil won in 1994. I knew that they were a powerhouse. They are now trying to repeat their World Cup championship again this time. But we've now gone through the round of 16 teams who have now played each other, and now we are entering into, this will happen tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, the round of 8, or otherwise known as the quarterfinals. And with that, we have 8 teams that made it to this level. They will play each other, and then from that, they will move on to the semifinals that will take place on Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday the 6th and Wednesday the 7th. Then, based on the winners of that team, those teams will then advance. Now, I don't quite understand this, and I'd love for somebody to email me and tell me more about this. Email me at tellcarole, T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com. There is something called the Match for Third Place that's going to take place on July 10th. I'm not sure what that is. Next week, I will know what that is, and I'll come back and tell you about it. And then the final game will be played on July 11th, and that will be the final, obviously. And whoever wins that will win this gold globe and trophy, and they will be the World Cup winners. Well, let me back it up and talk about what's going to happen on Friday and Saturday. We have these 8 teams, and they include the Netherlands and Brazil. They are going to be playing. Now, I'm not going to necessarily give you which day because one team will play. Actually, I believe I have it right. I believe that the Netherlands and Brazil will play tomorrow on Friday, July 2nd. and there's a break going on now. So this is the rest period. No one's playing today, and no one played yesterday, but the quarterfinals will start tomorrow. And so the Netherlands and Brazil will play each other, and then whoever wins that game will then automatically advance to the semifinals. Also, on tomorrow, I believe Argentina will play against Germany. And again, whoever wins that will then advance to the semifinals. Then on Saturday, you have Uruguay and Ghana. Again, Ghana is the last African country remaining in the competition, and they will play Uruguay. Uruguay is a small country in South America. I would love for you to go and look it up on the map so you'll not confuse it with Paraguay, even though they're sort of close to each other. But Uruguay is a coastal country, and Paraguay is landlocked. So Uruguay and Ghana will play on Saturday. And then also on Saturday, Spain, who beat Portugal earlier this week, they will play Paraguay, again, this other South American country. So that's the lineup of what's taking place right now. So, again, let me just repeat that. Tomorrow you'll have, and please forgive me if I've gotten the days mixed up, but I know that the lineup is correct. The Netherlands will be playing Brazil, and then also tomorrow Germany will be playing Argentina. Argentina is a hot team with a real hot coach, and I just love to see them in action. Talk about passion. They have it. And then on Saturday, Uruguay will be playing Ghana, and the last game on Saturday will be Paraguay and Spain. So at this point, it doesn't matter if your team has not won. I just encourage everyone to watch a full game. It really, I think, is exciting to just watch the game itself so you can get into the head games that are being played. The fact of not just seeing men run from one end of the field to the next, but just get a sense of the strategy that's being used by the goalkeepers. Very important job, the goalkeepers. And can you imagine how they feel if, in fact, there's a goal that's scored because they've missed pushing that ball out of the net area? I mean, not only is it a goal scored, but it's also taking advantage of their weak spots, and that's a reflection on the entire country. So we know that there have been really ugly things that have happened in certain countries because goals have been scored or particular players haven't scored goals and that kind of thing. But I would just say sort of step away from that, step away from politics, but just look at the strategy and the beauty of the game. I just think it's absolutely amazing. And I've been fascinated just by what's taking place. I've learned a lot. I have friends in other countries. They've straightened me out. Thank you, Garth Dallas, who straightened me out, that it was not the UK that was playing. It was England that was playing. And there's a big rivalry with the teams, the countries within the United Kingdom. But England obviously was playing in the World Cup, their home now, along with the United States. But again, just the strategy, the passion, the culture that comes out are the things that are fascinating for me. I'm probably going to put together a proposal and shop it around for some sponsorships because I now want to just do some studying and to observe what takes place between now, 2010, and 2014, when the next World Cup will be in Brazil. And just to see not only what happens between these teams and who plays who and which team moves ahead, but just the cultural nuances and the traditions that go hand in hand with the sport. Soccer or football is important. It's powerful all over the world because all you need is a ball and a field. You just need a ball and some space. There are grandmothers playing soccer in South Africa. There are school children who barely have books in South America or other parts of the world who are playing soccer. I saw a report of young children, young boys, who took a test, and the top winners received a trip from the Gaza Strip area that's very contentious right now politically, and they watched one of the World Cup games this week, and they said, oh, no, we are really paying attention to this game all over the world. You know, every day we're watching this game, and we're talking about this game back in our homeland. So I would say a tip to the United States, pay attention, wake up. Don't make fun, but pay attention to this whole concept of World Cup, because we're sort of lacking our excitement and our engagement in what I find a very, very interesting sport, a sport I've known about for a long time, but certainly a sport I've gotten to appreciate more and respect more when I have seen the number of games that I've seen over the last 2.5 weeks. So we wish all of these 8 teams the very best, have no idea what's going to happen going forward, but it's going to be a very exciting quarterfinals leading up to the semifinal match for third place, and then that final game that will take place on July 11th. I would also encourage you to go to one of the Spanish-speaking radio or television stations or internet stations, particularly here in the United States, because you will also learn an awful lot, because in the Spanish-speaking communities, soccer or football is very, very exciting and very endeared by those in that community. So you can learn an awful lot. It's been exciting with you. I hope that all of you have a wonderful, wonderful 4th of July if you're here in the United States. We'll be back next week, obviously, with a wrap-up with World Cup and another very exciting feature as speaker. And have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.